are back. It is another edition of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. And we are through with the greatest boxing card in the history of mankind. Did it live up to the hype? I think so. It was a great day and night. 7+ hours of boxing. It was insanity, Chris Algieri. I'm still trying to get over it.
Yeah, it did live up to the hype. I thought the fights were fantastic. I mean, we knew the matchups were great. A couple fights kind of got a little messed up. You know, obviously Shakur's fight, which that was probably the least entertaining on the card. But then, you know, the heavyweight fight, Dubois fell out, in comes Bacoli, which was like awesome. We talked about it a lot on our last show. So yeah, man, I think it lived up. I mean, we're gonna go through each one, but what a day of fights.
Dude, it lived up because the first fight, Smith and Buatsi,
oh, dude,
fight of the night.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a fight of the year type scrap. That was awesome.
That was like that was a bang. It was a little unexpected. Like I was kind of, I wouldn't say overlooking that fight, but I was like, all right, we haven't seen much of Buatsi. You know, he's not really like on the minds of boxing fans when he should be. Smith, 34 years old, a little past it. It's like, all right, this is like a nice opener. Didn't think it would steal the show. I think that was the most fun fight. I think that had the most action. I think that had the most ebb and flow. I think that had the most brutality. That fight set the tone. And from there, it was like, all right, the rest of you guys, you know, the next six fights, good luck trying to keep up with that.
Yeah, I'm gonna argue. I thought the main event was the best. But you're right, absolutely. In terms of brutality, in terms of violence, in terms of just raw digging in, that fight couldn't be topped. And what an open. And like you said, I think a lot of people are overlooking that fight. I mean, I'm very high on Buatsi, so I thought this was a great fight, and it was a good opportunity for the world to see Buatsi. But man, Callum Smith digs deep and shows that he's still around. Man, awesome fight.
Do you think it was too much boxing? I don't want to be that guy that sits here and complains when they have a stack of cash in their hand or a loaf of bread under their arm. But was it too much? Was 7 hours too long? Like, I almost fell asleep at some point when I didn't want to fall asleep. Like, I was watching it like on a laptop, like sitting on the couch, and like, you know, midday in the middle of the winter, you kind of doze off a little bit, and I was like fighting to stay awake and like get another cup of coffee. Was it too much boxing?
I can't speak to that because I didn't watch it straight through. I actually had to catch up on fights this morning. I had a bunch of stuff going on yesterday, so I don't know. I think it's great, but again, I didn't watch it straight through, so I can't really give a good.
But just
a good
in general, though, I'm out here.
I like them as long as they're early. I mean, I'm being selfish because I'm speaking over here on the East Coast of the U.S. Because the afternoon boxing, I love it. I hate the late nights, so I don't mind spending a whole afternoon, you know, watching fights, going in and out. Because listen, you don't I know they're great cards, but you don't really need to watch every single fight, you know, as they're happening. You can step away. You know, certain fights on the card, you're just like, nah, this one's not going to really do it for me.
That's why they put Shakur Stevenson on it.
I don't mind it.
Shots fired. I'm here to defend Shakur. I actually defended him on. I defended him on Twitter, and not even really defended him. And people were coming out. People just don't like him. And we'll get to that later on. But seven fights. It's a lot of fights. If I was Turkey Al Sheikh, if I was a Saudi Arabian, whatever he is, I would have put three fights on Friday night free. Like on regular DAZN. DAZN is not going to start putting fights on their platform without subscriptions. MVP Prospects 11 that I'm calling in Toronto next week is
nice.
You don't need a subscription. You can just watch it. You can just pull up DAZN and watch it for free. No subscription. I think maybe you put three fights on Friday night. Like Callum Smith, Buatsi could have been the main event of the first night. And then the second, it gives you like a little bit of an appetizer heading into Saturday with a traditional four fight card. That's my only critique. I'm not critiquing it all because every fight was fun. Like it was an unbelievable feeling of, all right, that fight's over. Now what's next? Like Callum Smith versus Buatsi would have been a main event in the UK. And that was the first fight of the night. And then I was like, all right, oh shit, Zhang and Cabiel is next. Oh, we're getting this fight next. It's just like, what is next? It was that excitement feeling and that like kind of forgetting which fight was next. And they did a wonderful job of the pace of it, because where I was a little nervous at the beginning, because there was this two fight that kicked off the pay-per-view. I didn't even know that was going to be a thing. It was one guy who lost like 40 straight fights. I was like, what are we doing here? Like, why are we putting this on the air? And there was a lot of talking in between. I was like, oh man, if they're going to do like 15, 20 minutes of the talking Phil. Heads in between, yep. Phil, they didn't. They rifled right through it.
Well, that I think that's been an adjustment that we've seen, you know, with these Riyadh cards. I think in the beginning they were really drawn out. You know, there was car giveaways, there was music, and it seems like Turkey's paying attention. He's listening. You know, he's listening. He's got his ear to the ground for what the fans are into, and they've really cut all they've trimmed all the fat, and they're keeping it pretty lean and running well, like well oiled machine. So yeah, and I think I agree with you, Dan. That's a really good point. The 2 days, the back to back days, would be really cool.
Like WrestleMania does it.
Yeah. Or even if it was like a Friday night, then Saturday afternoon. So the cards are still pretty close time wise. I think that makes sense because, you know, Friday nights are hard. It's hard to do a Friday afternoon show. People have to work. But if it was like a Friday night show and then a Saturday afternoon show, I like that. I hope, you know, I just said that it sounds like Turkey's listening. I hope he's listening to this. And that could be maybe a possible adjustment.
He's definitely listening. He's definitely listening. He's definitely watching. He's definitely looking at scorecards. He's definitely going over to corners and letting certain fighters
he's definitely
know
talking,
that
he's
down.
Talking to corners.
he's posting it on his Instagram. We'll get to that as well. Let's start off. Of course, this episode is brought to you by PPV.com. We are a week away from Tank Davis taking on Lamont Roach. Live from Barclays Center. Live streaming on PPV.com. Join me, Chris, Jim Lampley, Lance Pugmire in the live interactive chat. I was scourging the chat. Is that a word? Scouring?
Scouring? Yes.
Scouring. Yes. No G in that. Scouring the chat yesterday. It was awesome. Everyone was in it yesterday for the last crescendo, which I still don't know what that means. But it was still fun. So Lamont Roach and Javonta Davis and a stacked undercard. You might see your boy Dan Canobio doing pre-fight interviews on the broadcast. Just got a call to
breaking news again. Is that Dan Canobio breaking news once again?
Another gig. So on fight night, I'll be doing pre-fight interviews and DraftKings hits. I'll do some tap dancing in between rounds. I might actually fight. Might put me in the ring.
You might actually have you be, like do a ring card. You just stand and walk around the ring.
I always wanted to be the first ring card man.
The first ring. Ring card man. Ring card man Dan Canobio.
Yeah, my friends at MVP.
Round,
oh, will
you be a round man?
Round man. Skinny round man. My friends at MVP just put out a nationwide search for the next MVP ring girl. And I threw my hat in. I was like, how about a ring man?
Hey, how about a ring man? This is
you guys
is
need some pictures?
Guys. Let's go.
Need some headshots. You need some. I can walk.
I think they need. I think they're going to need photos of your legs, but I
can do that. Send,
not headshots. You need leg shots.
You got to see if you can walk and talk at the same. Walk and smile and hold something over your head.
Smile
at the same
and hold
time.
Something over your head.
I can do that. Yeah. So PPV.com is the place to be this weekend. Tank Davis. We're in the middle of this lightweight tournament or de facto tournament, or lightweight extravaganza. Keyshawn Davis, Shakur Stevenson, now. Tank Davis. So that is going on this weekend. Let's start with the main event and work our way through this card. Wow. Dmitry Bivol, hats off to you. Fought a spirited fight. Gets the majority decision over Artur Beterbiev. It was Beterbiev who started strong this time, and it was Bivol who ended the fight strong. It was a complete opposite of the first fight where Bivol started strong, faded late. You know, Beterbiev showed his age a little bit. Showed a little bit that, you know, he is not so invincible. But this is about Dmitry Bivol, man. This guy fought an excellent fight, Chris. I know you had him winning. What was your official scorecard? I had him up like 7-5, 8-4, I want to say. I didn't exactly score it. I was just kind of taking it all in because I was like, damn, I don't know if we're going to see another fight like this for a long time in terms of two evenly matched, just generational talents.
I had it 8-4. I had Beterbiev taken that last round to because it was. I mean, I had Bivol running away with it. Like you said, Beterbiev started fast, but you know, Bivol just. I think the man who actually made the adjustments was Bivol. Beterbiev pretty much fought the same fight in terms of technique.
Yeah,
coming forward, tons of pressure, trying to cut off the movement with that looping right hand, which was a really good shot, which only got through a few times. I think. Another story of that fight in particular is Bivol's chin, because he did get hit with some good shots and just was wearing them easily. You know, walking through them, was eating them. You know, you saw the damage on Beterbiev's face. You could tell that Bivol was getting through with those shots. Very, very smart combination punching. That's another thing. Combination punching with a puncher as dangerous as Beterbiev, that's really difficult to do without getting hit. And Bivol just showed that he's just on another level than all of these guys out here. And the major adjustment that I saw that he made was that he answered everything with combinations.
Yep.
In the last fight, he didn't answer all the time. And when he did, if sometimes it was one or two shots. This fight, he whenever he got touched with a good shot, I was like, ooh, good shot for Beterbiev. And then it was like, bing, 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 bing. Four or five punches from Bivol. And it kind of erased the good work that Beterbiev did each and every time. And he did not stop doing that the entire fight. I thought he was burning. He was running the engine too hot early on, but he kept it up.
Bivol,
yes. I thought he was working way too hard early on. I mean, a lot of that was because of the pressure from Beterbiev. But Bivol showed an incredible chin, an amazing gas tank, and just the boxing IQ to understand that, listen, I have to steal every moment that this guy gets ahead or gets a check on in the judges' minds. And yeah. He did that. I mean, incredible. I was so impressed.
It was an unbelievable performance. And I thought
it was actually an exciting fight, too. It wasn't just like tactical like the first one. This was a good fight.
No, it was a really good fight. It was way better than the first one. Beterbiev brought the pressure early, and I agree with you that Bivol responded with those combinations, but not so much early on. Like the first four or five rounds, Beterbiev the pressure was incredible, and I was like, oh my god, this guy is a machine. Beterbiev, you know, he's 40 years old. You know, can he keep this up? Was asked on the broadcast, and I was like, I can see him keeping this up. Although a lot of them were hitting gloves, but we saw in the first fight, hitting gloves when you're as powerful of a puncher as Beterbiev is, it's still like doing damage. And we saw the hand of Bivol's thumb explode, you know, like a Tom and Jerry looking injury on the hand of Bivol. I just thought Beterbiev came out real hot. And I was like, man, this is like a runaway train. And I thought he was going to just go on and win a decision. And then you got to give props to Bivol's conditioning, like you said, Chris, to be in there with a puncher like Beterbiev, to, you know, the chin as well, to take some of those shots early on, even on the hands and the shrapnel, like you say, and to be able to
flack.
Mm-hmm. Like that, the flack, and to be able to fire back combinations, especially from the sixth round on, where most fighters start to get tired. I think Bivol obviously found another gear because he threw more punches in the second round, the second half of the fight, than he did in the first half, Bivol. A lot of that is because I think Beterbiev slowed down a little bit, but more of it was Bivol saying, this is my game plan. I'm not going to fade late. I'm not going to fade at the end of rounds, and I'm not going to let Beterbiev get momentum. I'm not going to let him be a runaway locomotive like he's done so many times in his career, like he did in the first fight. So for Bivol to recognize all of that, that's mind, that's game plan, that's conditioning. I mean, we're looking at an all-time great here. Or finally, like I'm very happy to see him get his hand raised. I'm very happy to see him. Like it looked like it meant a lot to him, but unbelievable performance. I mean, if we're doing performance of the year, and this is the clubhouse leader for Bivol.
Well, first and foremost, let's recognize Bivol has now defeated two undisputed champions, Canelo and Beterbiev. That's crazy. He beat two of the best guys in the world, and they're huge names and they're phenomenal fighters. And then in terms of we were asking, I don't know, it was on our show. Somebody asked me like, you know, what do you think these guys learned in the first fight? And is it really going to matter how much they learned in that about each other in the first fight? And originally I didn't think it was going to matter, but it did. And the way that I saw it was that Bivol, as you mentioned, he really started to pick it up later on, but I also saw his confidence rise as the fight wore on. He went in there very, like you said, it meant a lot to him. He came in there very focused, and all that Beterbiev pressure early on. If Bivol wilted at all, he would have lost, but he didn't. He was teetering, but he was pushing back. He was fighting against the tide. And then once you have that momentum shift or that aura change, and I've been in fights with that, like, yeah, you got someone who's really coming on. And then you feel them pull back a little bit and you're like, oh motherfucker, I got you now. And that's what Bivol, I felt like he did in the second half of the fight. He was like, oh, you're slowing down. Oh, you're not a machine. Oh, you're not going to keep going at this pace. Oh, I got you now because I got way more in the tank. And it was really cool. I'm getting chills talking about it. It was really cool to watch him, his confidence grow as the fight went on in such a close, tough fight.
Do you think?
Well, it was not
better
close.
It was close. It was close.
It was competitive, super competitive, but yeah.
Some people had draw. I mean, I saw scorecards all over the place. It was just that type of fight. This is like a Golovkin Canelo type of matchup. Where
no matter how these guys fight, they're always going to be
right. Tight. You throw these guys in there for 100 rounds, you're going to get really, really close stuff, and that was the case. And do you think Beterbiev showed his age, or was it more of Bivol just yanking it from him?
I don't think so. I don't think it was an age thing. I thought he finished the 12th round strong. I thought he dug in deep. He started fast. I mean, he got that last round. I think he was just getting out hustled. I think that I thought this was more of a game plan thing than like an age or the fact that the fights were close together or if there was any kind. Both guys looked healthy. And even though Bivol, I think he mentioned some injuries in a post fight interview, but I don't think it was an age thing. I just think that Bivol fought the better fight. He made the correct adjustments from the first fight.
133 days separated the first and second fight, which is like, that's like an old school stat. That's like an 80s, 90s thing. And I think we were questioning that heading in. I think that made for a better fight. I think it made for, neither guy had to sit around and wait. For Beterbiev, we questioned whether that was a good or bad thing, like another camp. He looked pretty good in the first six rounds, and then Bivol snatched it from him. But Bivol, you could just tell Bivol really wanted this, and that's really cool to me. It's not like some fighter, this guy's beaten Canelo. He's been a champion for so long, but he always wanted to be undisputed. And the first fight, you can tell it really hurt him. And he said something to Grisham, or Grisham reiterated something he said in the fighter meeting, like food didn't even taste good for the last 133 days. That's like awesome. Life sucked. Like life wasn't colorful. And think about how much he made in that first fight, Bivol. Think about how much he's made in his career, fighting Canelo, fighting Zerto.
He didn't care about that.
Did not care.
He didn't care about that.
And the minute his hammer's raised, you saw like an illuminating smile on his face and just like, I did it. I slayed the giant. I'm undisputed for at least the next couple of months. And if they make the third fight, they can't take that from me. And this whole corner, you can just see this whole camp was just like, it felt different than any other win you've seen in years because, Bivol is such a competitor.
And it was such a drastic change from what you're used to seeing because he's him and his team, they're all very stoic, serious people. I've never seen him smile so big. So when you see that smile, it's like, wow, this like you said, it really means something to him. So, I don't know, all around.
Undisputed champion
has been
to our party.
Yeah, I mean, I posted a photo afterwards with him that he was at our party. I said that to my nephew. I was like, this guy was at our party. He was at the Inside Boxing Live pre-fight party. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, now he's undisputed.
Actually,
champion.
Two guys on the card. Zhang was there as well.
We had
Zhang and Bivol who both fought last night. They were at our pre-fight party. We gotta do one of those again. People have been asking.
We gotta do one. You're right. The stats: Beterbiev landed 14 of 46 punches. Bivol was more active. Bivol threw 57 punches around, landed 10 per round. Bivol's jab returned, and it's no coincidence that Bivol won the fight. Seven jabs landed per round. He landed 40% of his power shots. Bivol, he landed 50% in the first fight. So he balanced it out a little more. He threw that jab. He dedicated that jab. Bivol, that's his bread and butter. And he landed 170 punches, which is the most ever on a Beterbiev opponent. So
Beterbiev's face showed it.
Yeah, man. He got hit. He got hit a lot.
He had red blotches and little cuts all over his face.
Yeah, awesome fight. So do we see a third fight? Do we see a third fight between Beterbiev and Bivol? They're now technically one apiece. I know some people had Bivol winning
Rubber
the first
match.
Fight. Rubber match is out there. I put something out on Twitter. I'm getting cooked because I said I don't necessarily have to see a third fight. Like I'd rather see someone else step in there, like a Benavidez. Potentially fight Bivol. And my reasoning for that is like I just don't see it going any differently. I think Bivol will win even bigger in the third fight. I thought Bivol won the first fight. So he's up 2-0 in my mind. But all signs are pointing to a third fight. Turkey said, if they want it, it's there. Beterbiev said afterwards he would do it. So unless something drastic changes, I'm assuming we're going to see a third fight. Obviously, I would watch, and obviously, I would be super into it. But you know, I would you agree that it's now Bivol who has all the momentum, and you know, he's the one that's in his prime, and Beterbiev is just going to be older.
I do agree with you. I don't need a third fight. I don't. Again, I agree with you. I thought that Bivol won the first fight. He obviously won this fight. I had it 8-4. I didn't have it all that close. Not that that's not a close fight, and it was very competitive, but I do not need to see a third fight. These guys are obviously like super comparable, but it just seemed to me it seems like Bivol has his number to a degree, and you know, you saw it in this fight, but you got to kind of give Beterbiev the opportunity to make adjustments as well. It's not quite fair to be like, all right, first fight was razor thin. This guy gets it. Okay, we got a rematch. I have the opportunity to make the adjustments necessary. I get the win, and then I run off into the sunset and fight somebody else. Although I wouldn't blame Bivol for that. If I'm Benavidez, I'm throwing my hat in the mix right now. I'm like, we don't need a third fight. I'm the guy. Let me in. Let's go, Bivol. Fight somebody else, you know, and I'm the next guy there. I think it's possible. It is possible that someone could step in, because it's up to Bivol. He can decide whether he wants to do this third fight or not.
Yeah, I think there'll be a third fight. I mean, trilogies are part of the fabric of boxing. And, you know, this is a, you know, very rarely do you see a one apiece, one win apiece, and you don't get that third fight. Yeah. Especially when you have a financier out there in Saudi Arabia that's willing to put these fights on. We'll most likely get that third fight. And
Of course, Beterbiev wants it. Beterbiev 100% is going to want it. It's going to come down to Bivol. If it doesn't happen, it's because of Bivol. It's not because of Beterbiev.
So, yeah, I mean, the only other choice out there is Benavidez. Does Bivol want to fight Benavidez, or does he want to fight Beterbiev?
41-and-a-half-year-old guy that he already beat.
Well, no one also brought up Canelo. That was the, you know, Bivol. Canelo has said that I want to fight Bivol again. He did not say, he's never said I want to fight Beterbiev. So when Beterbiev beat Bivol in the first fight, that kind of stopped all of that with Canelo potentially going up to 175 again. I'm curious to see if those talks will intensify, especially with Canelo with Riyadh season now. Will Bivol said he would go down to 168. To fight Canelo, or Canelo go up to 175?
Well, he came in light for this, right? He was under 75 by a couple pounds, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was 173, maybe.
I think he had mentioned that too, coming in lighter.
Yeah, so we'll see there. If I was a betting man, I would say third fight, trilogy, Benavidez close second, Canelo third.
That's a good order.
Well, the thing
that's likely.
Canelo's locked up until next February.
Yeah.
Well, they say he's fighting again next year in February. So this year's set. He's fighting Skull and he's fighting Crawford. And then he's supposed to come back in February in Saudi Arabia. So I don't think Canelo's in the mix, but I wouldn't mind seeing it. Quickly before we end here, Dmitry Bivol got to be top 4 pound for pound in all your rankings. Taking out Canelo Alvarez 2 years ago. Now taking out Beterbiev in their rematch. His dominance at 175. The Zerto win as well. We're talking like, you know, generational talent here. Obviously a Hall of Famer. I mean, this guy, on top of getting that win over Beterbiev, he just cemented his legacy even more.
Oh, absolutely. And if he does it again, if they do the rematch and he gets another win over him, it pretty much wipes away his loss, his first loss, because he was razor thin and very controversial anyway. And you're basically looking, like you said, a generational all-time great. I mean, she probably is already. But he's still got a lot of fight left. He's 34, but he's pretty fresh. He's taken very little damage over the years. I say it all the time. That first time I saw him when I was ringside, I was in the corner, actually, for Sullivan Barrera. It was Bivol's first defense of his title. And it was the very first round. And I was like, immediately, like, this guy's special. This is something else. And I remember his manager afterwards was very upset, Sullivan's manager. And he was talking to me. We were in the emergency room after we were getting checked out. And the manager was like beside himself. He's like, man, he's like, I don't know what happened. Like, I'm like, this guy's really good. He goes, what do we do? Do we get a rematch? And I go, no. Sullivan never beats this guy. And he goes, oh my God. So what do? Do we retire? I go, no, there's other belts. Go fight somebody else. Just don't fight this guy. I'm telling you, we never beat this guy. He's special. I saw it immediately in the first round when I was ringside. I'm like, oh wow. Man, this guy's something different.
Not only that,
which is why I was telling everybody about the Canelo fight leading up to it. I remember I got asked by somebody, they were like, "Well, what can Bivol do to stay competitive?" I'm like, "Stay competitive.
Yeah, he's gonna win.
He's gonna win this thing."
Yeah, I mean, and Eddie made a big mistake there. Yeah, and in this fight, I thought what better if he kind of stood his ground a lot more, because when you talk about Bivol being 34, the first thing you think about is his legs going, because he depends so much on them. In this fight, he was not as mobile. He obviously was like, "I'm standing my ground, and yeah, I'm going to take some freaking shots, but I'm going to stand in the pocket more." So if he can, you know, if his legs do give out, which every fighter does, you know, he can still be there in the middle of the ring and work, and reflexes could be something that takes him into age 35, 6, 7.
Well, he's one of those guys who's going to fall off quicker than others because of the legs, and his reactions are what he fights off of. Kind of not similar to a Roy Jones, but in that way, that where someone depends on things that go first. That's why Beterbiev at 41 is still effective, because his style, he doesn't move a lot. He's coming at you. He's physically strong, obviously. You know, he's got a killer punch. If you're a puncher, your career can always be longer. And you see that with both these guys. So yeah, Bivol is going to fall off sooner than a guy like Beterbiev, but he still has a lot to do. He's still pretty young.
Yeah,
and he's done so much already. He doesn't need to do much more to be that generational talent that we're talking about.
Beating Canelo and Beterbiev is insane. That's like two of the best wins of any active fighter in the game today. Like, his resume is crazy.
He could fight two more times and literally retire. There's nothing else to do. If he beats Beterbiev,
he's talking
again
about going up to cruiserweight.
That's crazy. I mean, he already beat Zerto. Zerto's like one of the top guys at cruiserweight. It's Opetai and Zerto, which are we getting that? Is that happening?
I don't know. Maybe.
That'd be awesome. But either way, I mean, I could see him being good at cruiserweight. Just his style, the speed will give those guys all trouble.
Let's move on. Joseph Parker, KO too. I don't mean the laugh, but Piccoli just looks huge. He goes in the ring. Bro, he was barely
moving.
Like
a refrigerator.
I thought my PPV.com, it froze, which it never does, because it's the best way to watch a fight. I was like, is Piccoli moving? Like, he literally was just standing there like a stationary target, so big, so rotund. And Parker looked massive too. He was at his biggest. Yeah. Parker knocks him out in the second round. This was one of the more exciting fights because of the late drama with Piccoli showing up practically moments before the fight started, connecting flights, jet lag. I mean, I put money on Parker winning the decision. I didn't think he was going to wipe him out so fast. That was kind of like, that's probably what we thought was going to happen. Or, that makes sense. You know, Piccoli not training, coming in super late, jet lag. It's Parker being in the best shape of his life and, like, in such a groove. I didn't think it was going to be that quick, though.
No. I mean, I guess when he tipped the scale at 315, I was like, oh no, this guy wasn't training, because he's a heavyweight. Heavyweights don't change their weight that much. You don't have to like
chilling, eating.
You don't
hanging.
Have to lose weight. So that just that shows you that he was really like sitting on the couch. He came off the couch for that fight. I feel bad for Piccoli because of how it ended, but like, you know, he stepped in, got a bag, didn't have to train. Like, I get it. But
dream?
Also, yeah.
As a fighter?
Not really, not to get knocked out in the second round. But
the question will be now.
I'll say this, though. I mean, he did hurt Parker right before he got knocked out.
That's what I'm saying.
His hands are fast, dude. Even at 315, the speed of the hand speed of Piccoli is impressive for a guy that big. He came out there super cool, super calm, just walking in, fast hands. It lands a good left hook to the liver on Parker. I didn't expect him to get one shot KO'd though.
It was a temple shot, and he got up and didn't know where he was. It was funny because they were like, his trainer okays the fight on short notice, and then his trainer stops the fight after two rounds. So, I mean, it was over so quick. And now we have all the armchair quarterbacks.
That's a good move, because the guy, if he's not in shape, he's only going to get hurt.
Right. And then you got to protect him. Now the armchair quarterbacks are out. And the people that were like, Piccoli's a warrior, I can't believe it. You know, he might go in there and shock the world and beat Parker. He could do it.
He almost did.
He's, he's got hands, this, that, and the other, are now, has now turned into, I cannot believe they allowed him to take this fight. I cannot believe they let him fly commercial, connecting flights. He shows up and gets badly beaten. Now his aura is gone, and his invincibility is gone, and he's exposed.
That's the revisionist history.
That's the voice too. That's the voice too.
That is the voice. That is. I heard it on X.
Every armchair quarterback out there.
They're the same person. It's the same person that was before. It's like, oh, that guy's the best. And after, it's like, you should have never have done that. But that's, you know, that's what revisionist history is.
Well, do you think that? Like, no. Yeah, he made a bag. This was found money for him. Like, he was supposed to fight, and he's still going to fight in May, according to Turkey, against F.A. Ajagba. This was found money. It was probably an insane amount of money to come in and save the co-main event. Did Martin Piccoli's invincibility and aura take a hit because he got wiped out by Parker?
Yes. Yeah, he got one punch KO'd by a guy who hasn't had a knockout in years. So yes, absolutely tarnished. But that's the risk he took, and he understood that. And I actually think the corner stopping it as fast as it did was a good move. They knew what this was. This, like you said, this is a smash and grab job. you're kicking in the door, you're grabbing the money, you're running out. No planning, no training, no, you know, it didn't take a scientist to go in there and figure this out. They were going in there to get money, and I think it was a good move. Definitely tarnishes them, but listen, man, we're in a different era now. We don't need O's all the time. We can have guys with losses. Look at Parker. Parker has losses. He has two losses. He's been stopped. Look at the run he's on. So Piccoli comes back, gets on a run. I mean, you put it in the rear view.
I mean, he could easily put it in the rear view because of the era that we're living in, like you just said. Like,
he's still going to fight a Ajagba.
He's going to fight a Ajagba, and that will be the real test because he'll have a full training camp. And Ajagba will be ready to go and ready to take his head off. He beats Ajagba, he's right back in it. And yeah, it's tough. It's tough because, you know, you can't fault the guy for stepping in and taking the money. Anyone would do that in any walk of life, not just boxing. If someone was offering you a crazy amount of money to come into work for one day, hey, we need you at work, and we're going to pay you 50 times what you usually make. You're running there. And maybe you don't get the job properly.
And everyone is going to be talking positive about, like, wow, you're a warrior. Like,
On Monday at the meeting, Dan, you came in Sunday and you really saved us. And he's a good soldier, Piccoli. And his reputation does take a hit because this is the fight game. And when you get into that ring, you get exposed one way or another. And it did and it didn't, I think. I think, we don't look at him as this unbelievable second coming of George Foreman, who destroyed a guy that in Jaron Anderson, who doesn't necessarily even want to box anymore. And then Parker takes him out, but also you have to factor in the late notice and him, you know, giving us a lot of excitement for about 48 hours. I still think he's a crowd favorite, and I still want to watch him fight. And I still think there's room for him in this heavyweight picture.
1,000%, 1,000% to all of that. How about Joseph Parker, man?
Yeah, let's talk about Parker.
How about Joseph Parker? First of all, we were singing his praises on the last show because it broke that Martin Piccoli was going to be the step in, which is a super dangerous fight, super dangerous guy. But Parker, man, goes, I don't know what his mindset was. Like, I want the toughest guy possible. I want a fight that's still going to, you know, matter to the boxing public. Or if he went what I said, and I was just like, I'm already fighting a big puncher anyway. I'm in the best shape I'm possibly could be in, and I have a guy who's dangerous, who's coming in the worst possible shape he could be in. So, you know, like I said, if he didn't want to fight Piccoli, then that means he never wanted to fight Piccoli. So that was the best opportunity. That was the best time to fight a guy like that, who's super dangerous. He was going to have to deal with him later anyway. Now he's dispatched him. He's elevated his own status, his own profile. He gets his first knockout in many years. I mean, Parker is riding high, dude. He's right there.
Should Joseph Parker fight Alexander Usyk next? Forget Dubois.
Yes, yes.
Go for the three belts in Usyk.
Yes. Why would you not? You had a shot at a title. You deserve a title shot. It fell through by, you know, unfortunate circumstances. You now have Usyk, who's been, you know, kind of waiting, not really waiting around, but he can do whatever he wants on his golden throne. But there's an opportunity there for Usyk to fight a guy who's in demand right now, coming off a humongous win, while Dubois you know, whatever's going on with him, if he's injured or sick or, you know, who knows how long he's going to be out. Parker, yeah, get him right back too, because that was an easy fight.
Sure. Well, it was an easy night for him. But now Usyk is saying that he wants to fight Dubois. He was ringside and he was doing interviews all week, and Usyk says, I want Dubois rematch. He didn't say I want Parker.
Well, that was before this happened. But yeah, it was before this happened. Wow, now I'm putting on my conspiracy cap. Does Dubois pull out of this fight because of the Usyk opportunity?
I mean, I thought about that too. And then I thought about, you know, maybe there really is some sickness going around there. I've heard from some people out there that there was like stomach bug going around. I'm thinking a lot of things. I mean, heavyweight boxing, with the amount of money that's being thrown around, like, this is, you got to make the right decisions. You got to make the right choices. You have to, you're playing chess at the highest level with a lot of money on the line. It's not out of the realm of possibility to think Dubois was like, I'm not fighting Parker. I'll go fight Usyk.
Parker was a dangerous fight. A lot of people were predicting actually Parker for the upset.
Dude, Parker, with his size now, like, the one thing that prevented me from thinking he could beat a lot of these guys was the size. You know, he looked huge. You know, he said he was carb loading during the week, and now, you know, I grade that on a curve with the knockout because of Bacoli being a stationary target, 315 pounds. What was the weight? All that.
I'm looking him up.
267.
I want to see the difference in weight from other past fights, because it was funny. I was telling my brother, because
Parker in 2018, I felt like it was like 230 tops.
Holy shit. He's 20 pounds heavier than when he fought Zhile Zhang. Wow, yeah. You're right.
Yeah, yo, 267. He looked huge. He looked so
Because I was saying to my brother, like, I'm like, I mean, Dan, have you been around Joseph Parker? Like, physically?
Never met him, Bon. Never met him. Maybe.
Great guy, for one. But, dude, he's big. Yeah. He's a big, I mean, he's obviously a heavyweight, but, like, he's a massive human being. Like,
yeah, but he's not like the super heavyweight. You wouldn't put him in super heavyweight mold, would you?
Dude, he's 267 now, and he's jacked.
Oh, now, ooh. Yes. Now,
that's
yes.
Crazy.
Like, but, like, a few years ago, he was...
The 240s, you know, guys who were... 240 heavyweights are, like, they're, like, regular heavyweights now.
Yeah.
This era that we're living in. If you're 240, you're, like, a regular heavyweight.
What's his
You're 265 and up, you're entering super heavyweight status.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, now he is. But, like, no, when he was fighting Joshua... Oh, 6'4".
Dan, he's 6'4".
6'4", 267, yeah. He's super heavyweight now.
I was hanging out with him in Vegas a couple years back, and I was like, holy cow, you're way bigger than I thought.
Fucking heavyweights, guy. Man.
Fucking heavyweights. Different. How are we the same species? How are those guys the same as me?
That's why they get the big bucks. That's why they operate in their own stratosphere. That's why they sell out the Wembley. That's why, for the history of time, you're considered the baddest man in the world if you can become heavyweight champion. Parker's trying for that. So I would say right now there's like three top heavyweights. We'll add a fourth in once we talk about Caballero in a second. Three top heavyweights. There's Usyk. There's Parker. And there's Dubois. So who's going to fight who? Because for a while, we thought, you know, Usyk and Dubois would get that rematch. It's built in. It's undisputed. You know, they had the first fight, but now Parker is making a heavy case for himself. He was supposed to get this Dubois fight. So we'll see. And I mean, Turkey will figure it all out. There's a very good chance they all fight each other, round robin style, with the amount of money that's being thrown around. Like, what matchup do you want to see next?
I do like the idea that Parker or Usyk, that's a fight that I never thought of.
That's really cool.
Until this. That is a cool fight. And I think Parker deserves it. Now, a lot of this comes down to the fact that Parker deserves it. And I'm going to correct myself. I said that he had gotten a knockout in a while. He hadn't gotten a knockout at the high level in a while. He had beaten two guys. He had knocked out two guys recent, you know, a couple years.
Well, he's not known
back.
As a knockout guy.
No. But I'm just saying that those, I had said earlier that he had had a knockout in years, but he knocked out a couple lesser opponents. But at the highest level, he's not been a knockout guy. So for this Bacoli win is big. But yeah, that fight interests me a lot. I never thought about it. I never thought that it was a fight that made sense, but because Parker has been on such a phenomenal run, you know, he beat Deontay Wilder, Zhile Zhang, and just knocked out Bacoli with one punch. That's deserving of a title and a big bag. Get that guy some money.
Yeah, he definitely got it. They probably increased his pay to fight Bacoli.
Just, you think? It's possible.
I just assume.
Regardless, his next fight, add a zero. Add a zero to whatever he made.
I just assume anything in Saudi, it's just money everywhere. It's on money. The floor. And it's yeah. like literally just rains money.
I don't
money.
Know. I'm not feeling comfortable. There's a bear. Okay. Let's go.
They're just really taking care of these guys.
Dude, that's honestly, that's not just in Saudi. That's how boxing operates. I've been in those situations where something comes across, you know, the bow of the boat and you're like, I'm not really liking this. They're like, why don't we just up your pay a little bit? Why don't we just up the purse? Okay.
Throw some money at it. Shakur Stevenson gets a stoppage over, what's his first name? I just have Padley. No offense. Josh? Josh Padley. Look like a Josh.
I don't know. He does look like a Josh. We made fun of his opponent's names on the last show.
Josh Padley. Shakur gets the stoppage over Josh Padley. Padley gave it a go.
We finally predicted one of these. Our pick actually hit on one.
No,
of these,
I picked decision.
Oh, you did? Oh no, I didn't. I picked KO.
I picked in my parlay. I put I had Shakur decision, Parker decision, which obviously did not hit.
Yeah. I thought he was going to get the because Shakur is a good body puncher and a guy coming in you know at such short notice. No, if Shakur's not knocking that guy out, come on, what are we doing?
We want Shakur to get the knockout. Everyone does. Yes. He better get a knockout. He better get a knockout. Every fight this guy gets in it because he's so much better than a lot of his opponents. Mm-hmm. And he gets the knockout this time. And now I hear from those same armchair quarterbacks, it took him too long. He was fighting my electrician. This guy was literally fixing light bulbs 2 days ago. It's insanity. Like, it made me defend Shakur Stevenson when I'll defend any fighter. You know that. But I'm not really a hater. I'm not a hater.
You love the fighters. You're good about that.
This is a pro fighter podcast. I do the damn show with a boxer.
What do you mean? Of course, most of the media members that are your brethren all make their money by talking shit.
Yes, I know fighters. It's and I hate it, and I really I love the fact that I have been able to make it to where I am, and I still want to achieve a lot more without going down that route, without getting personal, without bringing up race, without bringing up personal stuff about fighters. Without making jokes about these guys, cheap jokes about Shakur being boring or his hands or whatever, he gets the stoppage. It took him 9 rounds. Like late replacement, those are always tough. You can attest to that. Not a knockout puncher, Shakur Stevenson, but he stood. You cannot deny that he made it a point that he was a lot more active. That he really let his hands go. He closed the distance and he just hammered to the body. He might have had a left hand injury, and he still got this guy out of here. And people are still not satisfied with Shakur, which leads me to believe, and it's what I've always thought, no matter what he does, he's never going to get credit, unless it's a big name. Unless it's Tank, Haney, Shakur, or Teofimo. Shakur is never going to get credit for anything. So he might as well just still be the heel, because a knockout in 9 rounds isn't enough, because it was against an electrician.
Well, it's like you said. I mean, people just seem to just not like him. And I think maybe part of it is that, he came out of the Olympics like this smiling kid from Jersey. And like they were trying to push like the golden boy persona. And that's just not what Shakur is. Like, he's not that guy. Like, he's a tough kid who likes to argue and get down. So I don't know. I think that a lot of people maybe had an idea in their head about what he was going to be. But he's not that guy. He's not the nice guy. Just because he's a boxer and he tunes you up, he's not that guy. He's still a bad dude. And he wants to hurt you and he wants to fuck you up. So and he talks just like that too. So I don't know. I think maybe people got turned off by that. I don't know the style. I don't know what it is, but it turns out oftentimes when you are just a boxer, a pure boxer, a more defensive guy, I immediately comes to mind, obviously, the Floyd Mayweather's, but also our buddy Paulie Malignaggi. He was another one. He wasn't a nice guy. Just because you're a boxer, just because you're not knocking people out, doesn't mean that you have to be like nice and pristine. Like, Paulie was a shit talker. You know, like Floyd was a heel. Shakur is falling into that as well. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's nothing at all. And if everyone fought the same, it'd be a pretty boring sport. So you need the punchers like Tank, who's also a really good boxer. You need the boxers like Shakur that can stick and move, styles make fights, all the cliches you've ever heard.
The problem also, Dan, is that Shakur is so good. Fighters all look at him like, God damn. Because there is no one who fights like him. No one's that good. His ability is sublime. But it's also very highbrow. So a lot of these fight fans just don't understand what he's doing. Whereas you ask every fighter, like, yo, Shakur, and we're all just like, nah, dude, there's nobody like him. He's a different level. And that's what's tough about this sport, because it's such a nuanced and tough, such a nuanced and highbrow sport in terms of, you know, IQ. It's not just Rock'em Sock'em Robots, and a lot of fans come for that. And if you come to boxing for that, guys like Shakur are just not going to do it for you.
Nah, and his like persona, which I think is going to pay off for him as the heel, doesn't add to it. Like, you're right. I remember when he came out of the Olympics, he was smiling, got a great smile, still does. And they were,
but that was the only thing you saw. That was all the photos.
Right. They were angling him to be like, yes, you're right, to be this golden boy, when let him be who he is. And like, what he is a shit talking, defensive minded, brilliant fighter that now is playing the heel. Just keep playing that heel role, because no one's ever going to give you credit. And was it a great performance? It wasn't like out of this world, but he did what everyone wanted him to do. He knocked the guy out. And it's still not good enough, because, you know, Padley has a, you know, he was ranked top 15, Padley. And just because he had another job, which a lot of fighters do, and they really beat that to death. It was everywhere. Like, SportsCenter Instagram account posted it.
So stupid.
Like, him in this hard hat, and then, like, 24 hours later, he's fighting against Shakur. It's a great story. It's a human interest
story.
Guys,
do you know that that's most fighters? Like, what are we talking about? That's 99% of us.
Caleb Plant went on Twitter and was like, yo, I dug holes. I freaking were UPS.
Bro, I worked the week I fought Ruslan. I was fighting for a world title on HBO. I was still working. So we need to cut that shit out.
It's
stupid.
It's crazy. I mean, you can't. It's not everyone, but I heard it enough. But Shakur, you know, he needs a big name. And obviously, Shakur is calling for Gervonta. Gervonta is fighting next week against Lamont Roach. Their schedules are aligned. Shakur says it's the biggest fight in boxing. I tend to agree. Shakur's not going to get the credit until he clips a big name and a big puncher. And Tank needs a dance partner. I know we've been talking about Tank versus Keyshawn. But the big one is Tank versus Shakur, and I really hope we're close to it.
The big one is that one, but I think everyone's they're fatigued over that. There's you know, there's buyer's fatigue with that fight, because we're just or a different way, a more crude way to put it, we got blue balls on that one. Just like it's been too close. We've been edged too far that people are like, we're never getting this fight, so let's stop worrying about it. And then Keyshawn steps in. So Keyshawn steps in, and now people are talking about that. But you know, that fight has to happen. It's just crazy. It's taken this long.
I think it does.
Do we have any reports on Shakur's hand?
He said it wasn't so bad. He downplayed it afterwards. Said it, you know, it's whatever.
Was downplaying it while they were taking his glove off. He looked
no that, and he just stopped throwing it.
I used to remember that. So people at home, when you hurt your hand or you break your hand in a fight and they're trying to take the glove off, there's nothing that hurts more. It's worse than banging, you know, a broken hand on a guy's skull is when they're trying to take that glove off, because it literally feels like they're pulling the bones of your hand off. Like out of the glove. Yeah, because your hand, because when you're punching, you're making a fist, and it keeps, you know, if you do have shattered bones in there, it keeps them kind of tight because you got muscles keeping together. When you're taking the glove off, you have to relax the hand or the glove's not going to come off. So once you relax, any kind of bones that are not in place all move, and it's brutal. So when you see guys getting their glove pulled off and you see them being really tender or they're making a squinting, it's deserved. That hurts.
Yeah, and that's what it looked like with Shakur. He has hand problems. A lot of fighters have
taken my hand out of gloves at the fights, and literally my hand was like you threw a bunch of chicken bones in a bag. Like they were all just all banged up, all smashed, all splintered. Yeah.
Do you miss that?
No, not at all. That's the number one thing I don't miss, the hands. I got titanium in my hand that will be there forever.
Does it go off when you go through the
No, titanium is inert. It doesn't carry any magnetic charge. So
I should have known that.
You'll see it on an X-ray machine. So it's bright. It glows bright, bright white.
Interesting. You learn something new every day on this podcast.
That's right.
Next up, Hamzat Shiraz, Carlos Adames, Worst scorecard of the night. They fight to a draw. I thought Adames won. Majority of fans out there thought Adames won. Adames
looked great.
Outlanded Shiraz 90-48 in power shots. He threw 90 more. Adames outlanded Shiraz in total punches. Shiraz landed more jabs. I don't know. This was the case. To me, this fight, my biggest takeaway was we were wondering whether Shiraz could do it on the highest level because he has all the talent and he had a big-time push from his promoters and hype, but he's not ready. And Adames showed it is. And Adames should, at least he didn't lose his belt, Adames, because they could have really screwed him over here.
It would have been a lot worse if the decision went actually to Shiraz. I had Adames winning. And I think we've been very high on, at least I have been very high on Adames, at least on this show, but everywhere else as well. I had people messaging me there. I don't think Adames is good. I had multiple people message me that. And I'm like, you're wrong, but, and you'll see. I still thought that Shiraz was going to win, but a couple rounds into it, I was like, nope. Adames is too much for this young man right now. And I had said that Shiraz is the future, but the question was is the future now? And it's not. He's not ready for this level. I think people are going to be more aware of how good Adames actually is, I hope. And
get a rematch?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm Shiraz, no. If you're Adames, yes, of course.
It was talking about injuries. There was supposedly a hand injury for Shiraz. That's why down the stretch, he just didn't let his hands go at all.
Mm-hmm. That's very possible, but I think Adames should get a big opportunity now. You know, maybe unification, whatever. I mean, but the guy deserves it. He's a champion. Technically, he defended it, and he still has his belt, so he's still champion, which is the silver lining for him.
There's just not a lot of big fights at 160. It's like Shiraz is a guy with the Saudi attachment, so there's money there.
But even this wasn't really a big fight, you know, because Shiraz hasn't done that much yet.
Yeah, but it's big in terms of like, wow, I'm fighting in Saudi on the biggest card ever. Yeah. It's probably definitely the most money that Adames has ever made.
For sure, for sure.
So a rematch could be lucrative for him.
No, give him Lara.
That's an all PBC fight.
Yeah, give him Lara.
I think Adames is. Go ahead.
I think, bring him, come back, get a unification bout with you know, the lowest hanging fruit in the division in terms of champions. It's you know, no offense to Arizona Lara, who's phenomenal, but he's 42 years old.
Janet Beck is out there as the other champion.
It's a much harder fight to make.
Yeah. Adames Lara, I don't get why that was never made to begin with. And
I think, you know, it probably was going to get made, and this opportunity came up.
Yeah. I mean, it's a perfect, like, under, like, PBC pay-per-view co-main event. And now Adames, I feel like his profile rose up a little bit. He's got the sympathy of boxing fans, which you don't exactly always want that, but
it's rare you get it. But when you get it, you know,
ride it, use it,
run with it, baby, run with it, baby.
He's only 30 years old too. I get this feeling Adames, like, I thought it was like 35, 36. He's still like in his prime. So maybe he'll go up to 168. Maybe he'll go back down to 154.
Guy's a beast.
He's really good.
He looked strong, dude. He looked big. He looked strong.
He looked great.
He's a scary looking guy.
Overlooked all the time, and kind of derails the Shiraz hype train. He'll be back, Shiraz. He just, you know, bit off a little more than he could chew here. And
he just needs a little more time in the oven. A little more time in the oven. That's all.
So Turki Avcic, there's a big thing to come out of this fight. Gets up and towards the end of the, I think 10th round, gets up out of his seat. You can see him leaving the seat. Then you can see him going over to the corner of Shiraz and motioning with his fingers, two, and you can read his lips. And you can see it now on his social media, on his own social media, because a lot of accounts posted this. You're down 2 points. He's saying this to Shiraz. You're down 2 points. Come on. Which, to me, just seems very wrong. This seems highly illegal. But is anyone going to push back?
There's no conflict of interest there. None at all.
Did anyone ask him afterwards what was that about? I haven't seen that. I saw Brian Campbell post it on Twitter. Good for him. I don't see any questions out there. And then Turki posted on his social media.
He posted on his own.
It's like, dude, like, I mean, there's this whole debate about, like, open scoring. We would have known that if open scoring existed, but it doesn't. There's just something about, he's technically a promoter, right? There's something about a promoter And we don't know if he went over to the scorecards. We don't know if he looked. Did Turkey go over, look at the judge's scorecard, see it, and then relay the message to Shiraz's corner? If so, then that's obviously very wrong. If he just, if this was just what Turkey thought, oh, down two, you know, we see it all the time with trainers. You know, that's kind of like, that's not really cool.
With promoters, yeah, it's not really cool, but you see it.
Promoters cannot be around, promoters should not be around the judges. Those two should never mingle because there's too much that can go wrong there. But this is Turkey Ushi's show.
And it's not exactly like, oh, I'm just handing over money. It's going to go make sure my guy wins. You know, there's ways influence. To do it. There's influence. There's ways to do it. You can sweeten the pot without exactly handing over an envelope full of money under the table. You know,
but like
kinds of flights, different rooms.
Exactly. You know. That's been going on forever. But I'm talking like Eddie standing near the promoter. I mean, standing near the judges. I mean, that's just kind of like, it's just not a good optically, it's not good. Having a promoter so powerful like Eddie Hearn or Frank Warren or Turkey, who's the most powerful figure in the room, standing around the judges, kind of like looking over their shoulder. Never, ever, 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 ever should that happen. And nothing's going to come of this, like at all. This would be zero questions, zero investigation, nothing. It's just whoa.
Back in the day, like even like in old cartoons, that you know, it always knew that boxing was like a crooked sport, right? Like you think of the old time gangsters and the, you know, in the early, you know, whatever. I mean, the entire length of boxing, you always had gangsters around it and guys influencing the judges and being around, hanging around. But they did it behind the scenes. Everyone knew it. But now it's like, it's almost like it's in your face. Like nobody cares anymore. It's just like, all right, whatever. This is what this is. Just enjoy the show, people.
I'm looking at the comments on Turkey's thing you sent to me. Ellie Sackback says, great fight. So Ellie Sackback's not asking the hard questions. Boxing is disgustingly corrupt. Shiraz did not win that fight or even draw. What kind of judges are these, boss? Your Excellency, please do not back up this robbery. Giving instruction to the judges, hand over face emoji. Turkey, you know Shiraz got cleaned up. Mostly people are upset with the decision, not really that. Oh, here's in the comment. This is evidence that the dodgy Turkey LSG caused the robbery, clearly went off to the side, something in the judge's pockets. I'm not saying this.
I mean, it's not exactly that. It's not that. But it's like you said, the optics. It's not a great look. But
not a good look. That's just kind of what you deal with these Saudi cards. What else happened? Oh, Virgil Ortiz defeats Madrimov in a really good fight. Madrimov did what we thought he was going to do during the first six rounds, and that stick and move, be a moving target, funky, disrupt you, and he was disrupting Ortiz. Then Ortiz said, you know what? I'm not losing this fight. You know what? I'm going to start punching to the chest of Madrimov, which he's supposed to do against a mover. Eventually, I will find him. Eventually, Madrimov's legs have to slow down. And Ortiz took over, gets the best win of his young career, really solidifies himself. You owe him an apology, Chris Algieri.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I've never been so happy to be wrong about a fight because I love Virgil. I've always liked him as my favorite guy in the weight class. I literally thought Madrimov was the guy who was in the way for Virgil just stylistically. I'm never going against that kid again. I am never picking against Virgil Ortiz ever again. I was so impressed with his ability, like you said, to just be like, I am not losing this fight, because Madrimov came out looking brilliant. He looked really good.
Really tricky.
He was very tricky. Ortiz looked a little confused at times early on. And then he just went to what works, man. The fundamentals. I'm going to beat that shit out of your body. I'm going to get my jab on you. I'm going to punch your shoulders. I'm going to hit whatever I can. He looked so strong and was putting on so much pressure. And then Madrimov, showing the class that he has, he makes an adjustment late in the fight. He starts throwing these winging overhand shots. Again, being super tricky and just like loading up on overhand rights and overhand lefts. He was throwing that over the top triple G left hook on top of the head to try and cut through the guard of Ortiz. I thought that was a really clever shot. Madrimov showed, you know, why we all had him so highly, but Virgil Ortiz is a different level. He's the guy to beat at 54 for me.
I mean, this is a career defining win for him. There were still people out there that were doubting him because of the Boachuk fight, you know, the flash knockdowns, the trouble making weight at 147, the stop and go of his career for a while for the health stuff. And he's a little bit of vulnerability in some of his fights where, you know, defense was not his main priority, which really makes for awesome fights. It makes for fun.
His defense was great.
That's what I mean. He
was great.
That's what, like, we're seeing a maturation process right in front of our eyes. And that is Virgil Ortiz becoming a well-rounded fighter.
You're also starting to see why everyone around him is so high on him. Robert Garcia has been telling me about this kid for like 6 years. I mean, he's like, I got this kid. He's something else. He's completely different. He's an absolute monster. He's super focused. He can punch. He wants to hurt you. He's got defense. He's got offense. I mean, he's the total package.
Yeah, and we saw it at 147. And he talked about this for a while, is him being able to bully guys at 147 because he's just so much bigger and more powerful. And then there were questions about, like, can this guy do it at 154? And now he beats Boachuk and Madrimov back-to-back. And those are really tough fighters. Like Boachuk, no one wants to fight that guy. He's just a wrecking ball that, you know, is not going to get you a lot of money. And it's one of those types of fights where
he's a banana peel.
High risk, low reward. Madrimov, also high risk, low reward. But the reward is a lot bigger now with the Saudi money. We know that. Ortiz figures out Madrimov, gets him out of there. I mean, these are unbelievable learning processes here for Ortiz, or learning lessons, I should say, where, you know, it's not going to be easy. And like Boachuk's going to knock you down twice and you got to get up off the mat and you got to figure out a way to win. But Dreamoff is going to show you the most herky jerky, crazy style that no one can really replicate in boxing these days. And you're going to have to figure out a way to win that fight. And he does. This is huge for a young fighter. I mean, you got to pump the brakes on any hesitancy calling Ortiz one of the best guys at 154. Really cool stat here from CompuBox. Virgil Ortiz landed 166 punches on Madrimov. Crawford only landed 95 against Madrimov.
I was talking to you while I was watching it. I was just like, this guy's a problem for everybody, because he was really coming on. And, you know, I was comparing the performances for Crawford. Like, Crawford struggled with this guy. And Ortiz is like, he almost stopped him in the ninth. He was beating him up. He was like really beating Madrimov up in the ninth round, killing him to the body. I was like, this is wildly impressive. But how about Madrimov? Has there been a more dangerous 10-2-1 fighter ever?
Back to back losses now for him.
The guy is 10-2-1. He's lost to Terrence Crawford and Virgil Ortiz. But like, it's crazy that his record is that ugly and he's that good.
So Sebastian Fundora is the WBO, WBC champion at 154. He's fighting Cordell Booker on March 22nd in Las Vegas. Bakram Murtazalayev is the IBF champion. He is scary. Just kind of on the outside looking in. He's that sucks for him. Terrence Crawford, WBA champion, obviously going up to 168 pounds. That title, I don't know what's going to go on with that. They're going to strip him. They're going to let him keep it. But Virgil Ortiz knocking on the door here. In a loaded division, he's been calling out Fundora. Fundora versus Ortiz. Damn, that would be freaking gangbusters.
Ortiz chops that tree down, I think, relatively easily. I don't think that's a tough fight for Ortiz. I don't see
hell to watch.
Fundora being able to stop the forward momentum. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're gonna meet in the center of the ring, bang. But I don't see Fundora being able to stand up to the onslaught that Ortiz brings, the intensity that he brings, the combination punching, the body punching. Fundora has that long torso, man. It's a lot of real estate to bang body shots. Did you see that right hook that Ortiz was landing on Madrimov? That thing was brutal. And normally you don't see guys getting hurt to that side. He was destroying that side of his body with the right hand. You got Fundora, whose, you know, midsection is. You know, 4 feet long. You know, there's a lot of real estate for him to be banging those rib cages.
That's the fight at 154, I think, right now.
Tazaliev's a tough fight.
Tazaliev is a tough fight too. Yeah, I want to say that guy in the mix. I think he deserves it. Beat Tim Zhu. Eventually,
destroyed Tim Zhu.
Destroyed him. When Boots is done at 147 and decides I'm going up to 154, Virgil Ortiz versus Boots Ennis is going to be the next big one. That's the next, like, can't-miss fight. Pouring cold water on it?
Yeah, yes, definitely profile-wise, but I think Boots is going to have to show his worth at 54. I mean, because
eventually.
Ortiz is on a different stratosphere now with a win over a guy like Madrimov. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, man, this weight class was fun. And we've got a little bit of, you know, before though, there was a lot of question marks, right? Now I think we have the dust is settling a little more on this weight class. And Virgil looks to be the guy. Because I don't really consider Crawford a 54 pounder anymore. I don't consider him in that weight class. He's a super champion. He's above everything. He's done trying to fight these young guys who are coming up.
Fighting,
you know, he's got the Canelo fight. There's nothing else. So I don't consider him at 54 anymore. So for me, the number one guy at 54 is Virgil Ortiz.
Over Fundora?
Yes, okay. Definitely. I'm telling you, I don't see that fight being all that competitive. It'll be fun, but Virgil's different.
Virgil, Fundora, Murtazalayev, Jesus Ramos, Charles Conwell. And then you throw in like Boots coming in. Any of the 147 guys, not really there.
And Bohochuk. You can't forget Bohochuk.
Yeah, he's really good as well. Last fight that we'll talk about is Caballel. Ajit Caballel, who needs to be discussed now as a top five heavyweight, keeps his train rolling, stops Zhilhai Zhang, gets up off the canvas to stop Zhang, stands and trades with the big bang and lands some huge shots. Another win for Caballel. Is anyone taking this Saudi platform, this Riyadh season platform, and run with it more and use it to their advantage? I feel like I never heard of this guy until he started fighting in Saudi. Now he's a top five heavyweight, in my opinion. It's Ajit Caballel. Holy, good for him.
Yeah, he kicked the door in to get to this position. You know, he's had a good run. You know, he's got a bunch of knockouts now on these Riyadh cards. And yeah, he's a German heavyweight. We don't hear about those guys, you know, but he's got a platform where we're able to, he was introduced to the world and he's putting on explosive performances. He just stopped Zhilhai Zhang with the most concerted heavyweight body shot attack I've ever seen. I've never seen a heavyweight focus on the body the way that he has. In the Frank Sanchez fight, he was banging the body too. And the what was the big Russian that he knocked out?
Makhmadov.
Makhmadov. Yeah, that was all body shots too. I mean, this guy is a problem, and Zhang almost did what we said he could do. I think I picked Zhang for a KO early because I just thought his power was too much, and I haven't seen really Ajit, you know, at that kind of level deal with a guy that powerful. Puts him down, but Caballel gets up and goes right back to work. That was like a last stand from Zhang.
Yeah,
I have to mention this. Two of the coolest names in the sport of boxing fighting each other. Zhilhai Zhang, and I think is it Ajit? Ajit Caballel.
It's Ajit. Ajit. Yeah, we were saying Ajit.
I mean, we were saying Ajit, but we were wrong. Still cool. Ajit Caballel and Zhilhai Zhang, two of the coolest names in the sport of boxing today, fighting each other.
I don't know what's next for Caballel, but he's worked himself into, He's getting there, title contention or getting in the mix there with the heavyweights. For Zhang, he says he'll be back. He's 41. Just doesn't have the gas tank. He was breathing heavy in the second round. His hands were down.
Dude, the body shots were brutal too, though. I mean, he came out first round. He looked awesome. He looked really good. And then the body shots, I think he got caught with a good body shot. And then Caballel just stayed on it. Yeah, I mean, yes, Zhang is a sprinter. He's a bit of a front runner. But still, I mean, he still dropped the guy. He still looked good in the first round. He was gassed, but he's still dangerous. Zhang is a dangerous guy.
Yes, I hope we see more of him. I hope this is not the end of the road for him because he's also really come on in the last 5 years of his career, 41 years old.
And just couldn't get a title shot. It sucks.
It's wild. Caballel will, because he's a little bit younger. He's 32, and he's on the rise. All in all, great card. I would say it lived up to the hype. One of the best cards on paper. We saw some knockdowns. We saw some knockouts. We saw some bad scoring. We saw some unbelievable boxing with the main event. So it had a little bit of everything. I was thoroughly entertained for the 7 hours as I was watching this. Kudos to everyone involved that pulled this off because it was fun. And boxing needed this. I don't know what kind of business it did. I know Saudi doesn't care. But I was entertained. And I think a lot of boxing fans, for the first time in a long time, we're treated nicely.
Yeah. How are you not happy about that card? You know, there's always going to be gripes because people like to gripe. And you've been alluding to that, you know, from the start of the show. But no, fantastic card. Good for the sport, too. And it just, I don't know. I feel like I saw a lot of guys on this card that deserve the platform, deserve the pay, deserve, you know, what's coming next. You know, guys like Joseph Parker, guys like even Carlos Adames, even though he got screwed in terms of the scoring, at least we got to see him. And now people know who he is, and he's a dangerous guy. And Virgil Ortiz, who, you know, was getting a lot of flack from that Pochuk performance. And, you know, this was a really tough fight, but he's, you know, emerging where he is. And even a guy like Callum Smith, who's a hard guy not to like, who is pretty much been written off because his two biggest fights
huge really, for him,
really just shit the bed in those two big fights that he had. And for him to resurge his career that way, it's pretty cool. So I feel like a lot of good guys got their flowers on this.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was great. Callum Smith could fight Benavidez. I don't think he'll win, but it's still a fun fight.
That's a good fight. It's funny, because so much happened yesterday, I didn't really think about what the landscape at 75 now is with Callum Smith re-entering the top discussion. That's a good fight. I like that fight.
Yeah, there's a lot of good fights being made. We'll discuss them at length
more. I saw Vozdik last week at the Keyshawn Davis Berenchik fight. Vozdik is a player at 75. I wouldn't mind seeing the Nail and Callum Smith. That's a good fight.
Yeah, it's a good one too. A lot of good fights. Boxing is in a good spot right now. There's a lot of big time fights coming down the pipeline. Tank Davis, Lamont Roach is the next one. We'll be in Brooklyn doing some type of live show or something. We have a lot. Our next show will come to you from Brooklyn, New York, for Tank and Roach, and we'll make. I'm sure there'll be some more news to come out from this crazy weekend in boxing, and then. We bang the drum for Tank in Lamont Roach, which you can watch on pbv.com. That's it, Chris. Good show.
That's it. Good stuff. Long show. But a lot of people were asking about. They really were excited about.
Seven fights. When's the last time we had a review? Seven fights.
Yeah, true. But people were mentioning me. I can't wait to hear. Even some of my posts were saying, I can't
to
hear.
Love it.
Our show and our recap. So good stuff.
Those
are fun. Thanks to the listeners. You guys are awesome.
Yeah, but best community in boxing. We'll be back later on this week. From Brooklyn, New York, for Tank versus Roach live on PPV.com. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. See you.